fascinating aspects to discuss about Mode de Bamixos and its related inyanim. And it's interesting just in terms of organization. So it has a lot of overlap and a lot of key connections to some of the sugyas we've seen so far. And therefore, we'll definitely draw upon and deepen some of the things we've discussed already. At the same time, it comes to us in a little bit of a funny way. I was discussing with someone in this room recently about how sometimes the organization of Shas doesn't always lend itself to the kind of head-on discussion you might want to have about a subject, that you have to kind of back into a subject because of the way the Gemara presents it. So this certainly is the case in the way Modes of Amiktsas comes up in our Gemara, that it really comes about in somewhat of a reverse direction. And our Gemara brings it up because of a very complicated back and forth, which we'll talk about a little bit, but we won't start with, in terms of how our Mishnah compares to Modes of Amiktsas. Essentially, you have two people walking away with half of what they believe they should get, and you have a shvua being imposed. So there's going to be a discussion in the Gemara about how that relates to the inner mechanics of Modes of Amiktsas. So today, we're not going to focus so much on the complicated back and forth and the limudim that appear in Daf Gimel and Daf Dalet in comparing the two, but just on some of the basic issues within Modes of Amiktsas. Let's try to lay out some of the issues today and expand on them tomorrow. And in short measure, we should hopefully be able to map out the territory a little bit. So our Gemara, again, brings it up in the middle of another sugya, but we'll look at it as if it's by itself for a moment. So the Gemara starts off with a certain premise. On the bottom of Gimel Amud Aleph, the Gemara quotes Rabbah, whose statement appears elsewhere as well, that asking, posing the question, Mipnei ma amra Torah, mode b'miktsas hataina yishava. For what reason did the Torah say that mode b'miktsas should have to take a shvuah? And then he goes on to answer the question that there is a chazaka, there is a presumption, a reality, that ein adam meyiz panav b'fnei balchovo. A person would not want to be too chutzpahdik in front of somebody who is doing him a favor. So perhaps what's going on here is v'hai b'kulei b'oid nechbere. Really, if it was up to him, he'd like to deny the whole thing. V'had lo kafre mishum deno demeiz parav. And the fact that he's not doing that is only because of this metaphysical reality, so to speak, that he cannot be so chutzpahdik in front of someone who did him a favor. And therefore, that's step one. V'hai b'kulei b'oid d'lo d'lei. And really, he'd like to be moded to everything. V'hai d'lo ode yishtamute hu d'ka mishtamek minei. And the fact that he is not acknowledging everything is because he has to push him off for a little bit. And savar ada havale zuze uparanale. So that eventually, if I can buy some time, I will get enough money and I will be able to pay. And therefore, v'amar rachmana ramishvu alei keheche d'lo d'lei b'kulei. That therefore the Torah says, let's put a shvuah upon him so that he will be forced to confess the whole thing. So let's look at that for a moment as if it was an isolated passage without looking at it in the context of how the Gemara wants to use it for the understanding of our Mishnah or for the building blocks of the Mishnah. So first of all, just the opening question, that, oh, why should it be the Torah obligates the Modes of Bamiktsas to take a shvuah? So what would be the alternative? So that's one possibility. Right? The question that's raised by the Rishonim is, what's the premise of that assumption? That, oh, maybe you could have thought the Modes of Amiktsas should not have to take a shvuah. So Jonathan just yelled out, Nigo, where did he get that from?
Yes.
Tosus. But before Tosus, there is a somewhat difficult Rashi that says differently. Right? What does Rashi say over here? Now, why would I have thought that the person who is Modu Mikza should not have to take a Shavua? Because it sounds like he should be Kemeshu Vaveda. Right, that's Rashi's language here. That this person, last Rashi on the Amur, V'lo Choshvu Kemeshu Vaveda L'Fatro Shalo Kofar B'Kulo. That we don't consider him to be like a Meshu Vaveda who should be Pater. Now, this Rashi is somewhat difficult, and we won't spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. But essentially, what Rashi seems to be saying is, this guy is doing you a favor, so to speak. You might have thought that, listen, he could have gotten off of everything. But he's trying to come forward, trying to do a little bit right by this person. So that itself should put him in a category that should absolve him of a shul. Hi.
Isn't part of the Svarah Mishabed this Pater, according to whoever says Pater, is that in order that people will find things and return them?
Yes, exactly.
If he doesn't make Shvuas, then the Tovea is going to lose out.
Correct. So you are identifying part of the difficulty in Rashi. That essentially what Rashi is doing is he's making a equation here. And the equation is questionable. Now, the equation is questionable on pure halakhic grounds and pure technical grounds. So the question is, does Rashi mean it in a literal sense? And is he telling you an actual halachic derivation? Or is he saying something a little bit looser? So essentially what Eret is alluding to is that it sounds like Rashi is trying to say this guy should have a finder's benefit. That if you follow the current state of the law, so you know there is a lot of litigation that happens nowadays. And sometimes people will sue somebody who tries to help them. Which is why often people will not get involved with saving somebody from drowning or saving somebody who's choking or the like, because they're afraid that if anything goes wrong, not only will they not be thanked, but they'll actually be sued. And so that seems to clearly have negative social consequences. It would probably be in the interest of society to protect people who get involved in such things. It's an interesting question, by the way. It's really a different subject, but I think we talked about it last year in Parshas Shir, when we talked about Verapo Yerape. So the Gemara says in Bava Kamma that Parshas Mishpatim, which is certainly relevant Parsha for our sugyas today, Pasuk says Verapo Yerape, the doctor should heal. So the Gemara says Mikan Shiesh Rishus Lerofe Lerapos. Now we see from here that there is permission for the doctor to hear. And that's a big question what that means, because it's not only permitted, it's a mitzvah to restore somebody's health. It's clearly a good thing to do, an obligatory thing to do. So I need the Gemara to tell me that it's permitted. So there's some hashkafic reasons why that can be brought up, as some of the Rishonim say, maybe you might think that it's God's plan, I shouldn't interfere, and we have to be told that it's not the attitude to take. Or there's also a Chosh Mishpat reason, that maybe a person who gets involved, let's say a surgeon is going to cut someone up, so then, first of all, something could go wrong. Or you might think, what right do I have to cut someone in order to heal them? And in order to do that, maybe I need a Gzeres HaKasuv to allow it. So there is a certain responsibility that gets incurred when you're helping somebody, and sometimes it could be a little bit discouraging. You might think you need a Pasuk in order to allow it, or in order to encourage it. So too, a person who's Meshuv Aveda is theoretically taking somewhat of a risk, because you find an empty wallet, let's say, and you want to at least return the wallet to the owner, so there's a possibility the owner is going to say, oh yeah, sure, you claim to have found the wallet. I believe you stole the wallet and took the money and giving back the wallet. So you're putting yourself on the chopping block by coming forward with this Hashavas Aveda. So that clearly poses a certain risk to our interest in having people's property returned to them. So the Gemara actually says that it's because of Tikkun Olam. I guess what Aaron is referring to, that because we want people to return lost property, so therefore we give them this chus, they shouldn't have to take a shvua. So does that mean it's a din d'rabbanan? In which case, that will further complicate things in our sugya, because maybe it's not the presumption that a meshuv aveda really is off the hook from an aveda, from a shvur rather. Or do we say that it's a din d'oraisa, but the Gemara is still calling it tikkun olam, which is a possibility? So there's a couple of questions, but it's hard to necessarily plug this directly into what Rashi is talking about here. To say that the mod d'miktsos should be credited as a meshuv aveda, and therefore should be subject to this benefit, that he is pater from a shvua, which may itself be a din d'rabbanan, and therefore wouldn't really be relevant to all the back and forth in this Gemara, it's difficult to take Rashi literally in a very technical halachic sense. Now, I think it is possible to take it a little bit more loosely. And he's saying that essentially, maybe we could have thought that the halacha should be that we don't want to discourage somebody from doing at least a little bit of the right thing. So if a person knows, it's not a crazy thing to say, right? If a person knows that they're going to be in worse shape for confessing a little bit, you know, we try to teach the kids that better they come forward with what they did rather than lie about it. And we always say that, especially in the post-Watergate era, that the cover-up is worse than the crime. It's a statement that's been debated just how accurate it is or isn't. But we want people to at least have motivation to do as much of the right thing as they're willing to do. So you could hear why we would say that we don't want to discourage somebody from at least admitting a little bit. So essentially, if you want to take Rashi in a non-literal, looser sense, it makes sense. Why should we discourage this person from at least admitting the half he's willing to admit? At least let the lender get back the half that he could be getting, rather than put the guy in a worse position because of what he's acknowledging. So Rashi could just be saying there's a certain svara to say that we should let this person off the hook and not impose a greater negativity upon him because he came forward with something. Hi.
But there may be a
Yes, that's what Tosus says. Right, so that, as Jonathan noted earlier, so Tosus gives us a somewhat more satisfying answer for the technical halachic perspective. And Tosus says that essentially it is a nigo that's in effect. Theoretically. And they're theoretically, exactly as Ephraim is saying, that this person could have been kofar hakol and got off the hook from everything. So since he's not taking advantage of that, and he's saying more than he has to say, so theoretically we could have said, Migo, he should be off the hook. Hi.
There's also a problem with calling you a Migo because the person is being accused before he has motive, isn't he?
So still, he could be called for Hakol, though. It's not exactly a Migo de Boy Shostik, if that's what you mean. Right, it's not necessarily the case he doesn't have to get involved at all, so it's not that super strong amigo. And we'll see, it's not even effectively amigo at all. We're dealing with a havamina, right? But just in terms of what we could have thought that this person could have gotten off the hook by not admitting to anything at all, not by not saying anything, but not admitting to anything at all. So therefore, since he uses the more tricky claim for himself, so why don't we invoke the star of amigo and let him off the hook? Hi.
In terms of understanding the Rashi more literally, or like I guess Hashkafik, I think you can literally understand him more Hashkafik because he says Kim Meishav Aveda.
I think so too. I don't think it's such a problem to read Rashi that way. I think that he's saying that it's essentially there would have been a svara to have such a policy. Not that he's halachically the same thing as Meishav Aveda, right? You know, to put everything in a very literal sense, Rashi becomes much harder. I think as a question of would it have made a sense to have a policy like that, and that's what Rashi is telling us. It's not so hard to...
He says before, it's Kim Odin Mikta,
yeah.
It's not there because he had Aiden there.
I agree. Yeah, and I think it's certainly a tenable reading. So Tosfos says it a little bit differently. Tosfos says that there is a Migo here. And if you recall, so this we mentioned when we were talking about Migo de Ha'aza, and this is why we said that the Gemara is essentially telling us that a Migo de Ha'aza is not effective to get you out of a Shavua. That... Here the Gemara concludes that the reason we don't let this person off the hook is because of the ha'aza element. We assume that kofar hakol is not an option that's so easily available to him if he's not telling the truth, because it would involve ha'aza, and therefore that's called amigo de ha'aza, so he's chayiv in the shul. So you recall that we talked about this in the sugi of migo, and we said that migo de ha'aza clearly doesn't get you out of the shul. We weren't sure in general about how effective amigo de ha'aza is for anything. We saw that was a machlokas rishonim. That a lot of the Balei Tosfos, for example, Tosfos a number of places seems to say that it is effective in mamonis, it's just not effective in shavua. Again, our Gemara telling us at least that much, that it's not effective for a shavua. While others understood it differently, and others said that, like the Rambam and the Rimagash, that amigo isn't good for, any kind of amigo isn't good for a shavua. Right, so in other words, this Gemara is telling us Migo is not going to let you off the hook for a Shavua, or at least this much, this Migo will not let you off the hook for this Shavua, so you could read into this as much as you want. Like the Rambam and the Rimagash, that it's a problem with Migos and Shavuos, that Migos don't get you off the hook for Shavuos, which they have from other points also, it's not based on this Gemara, but it's consistent with this Gemara. Or you could say it's not a problem with Migos and Shavuos, it's a problem with Migos Dehaza. And Migos Dehaza are not effective for Shvuah. So there's a scope of how much, there's a spectrum of how many areas are going to be affected by this concept, but at least in our Gemara, we see Migo Dehaza not helping for a Shvuah. So that was the Havamin according to Tosfos. Sounds like it's a Migo, problem is Migo Dehaza. And according to Rashi, Meshuv Aveda. So now, once we've dealt with that, or at least looked at that a little bit, so the next question is, so why indeed is a kofer hakal pater from the shvur? So that is a machlokas harishon. Right, so now we know, so skipping past what the havmin is, we know that l'maskana, kofer hakal is pater from the shvur. If you say you don't owe anything, you don't have to take a shvur. And if you say you owe half, you owe part, so then you do have to take a shvur. So what's the reason for each half of that equation? So why should a kofer hakol be pater from a shvur? So gzeiras hakasid is the opinion of who? Of Tosfos, right? That same Tosfos we just saw ends off addressing this part of the question as well. And he says, sorry? He says it's gzeiras hakasid. But there is another opinion, right? Rashi and Bava Kamma. You saw that, the Rashi Bava Kamma was on the list. I really probably should put the whole Gemara in Bava Kamma on the list because it's very relevant, that Gemara in Kuvav and Beis and Kuv Zayin and Aleph. So if you didn't take a look at the Gemara inside, which again I didn't actually put it on the list, so definitely take a look at it tomorrow. It's also very relevant to the mechanics of this whole discussion. But Rashi over there says a pretty fascinating thing. Why is the Kofer Hakal Pater from Ashur according to Rashi and Bava Kamma?
To stick the
guy in the back,
doesn't it?
Oh, so his haza, right? His chutzpah, that he's willing to say nothing happened, that's what makes him nema. And that's fascinating to us because it's the flip usage of haza that we've had till now, or that we've had a few weeks ago and that we had a minute ago. That we've only been interested in the chutzpah till now. The holy chutzpah is the concept of Azaz to Kedusha. We've only been interested in the holy chutzpah till now as something that limits our credibility. That we don't say there's an ego where the other option would require too much chutzpah. That's probably less of a jump. But here you have Rashi saying, based on this, that chutzpah is so daunting that not only is it something we're concerned about, that we're worried that chutzpah might scare you off, so we're not going to credit you with as much because of its existence, but if you're willing to brave the fires of chutzpah, if you're willing to say something which would require a lot of chutzpah if it wasn't true, a lot of haza, that itself will give you ne'amanus. It's an opposite usage. Jonathan?
Isn't the implication of all the haza arguments that we've seen is that he's not going to have the brazenness to make a shvuah in front of his balfobo?
So
over here, the whole point is that he should make a shvuah, or else you're not dealing with the inhaza. Well, someone can lie in front of his balfobo, he's not going to make a shvuah in front of his balfobo.
So you're actually addressing in a backwards way, sort of, or kind of from the other side of the equation, what I was about to get at. Because on the one hand, it's interesting that this is the opposite use of chutzpah, it's the opposite use of ha'aza. But until now, ha'aza, the assumption that you won't be mazed, just limits how much credibility will extend to you. And just now, we said we're going to give you credibility because of ha'aza. But it's an important question to ask, and it's relevant to what you just mentioned, how much credibility are we giving you? Right in the context of Migo, let's say it's about mamonis. So we'll say that we could have given you some more monetary believability, but ha'aza is going to limit how much we extend that. So are we giving someone monetary credibility based on ha'aza? Not really, right? This is talking about a very specific context. It's talking about chutzpah and the context of a shvuah. So maybe it's just addressed to that end. That we want to impose a shvuah on someone. Now shvuahs, as we know, are not foolproof mechanisms. A shvua is a type of birur sometimes. That's an interesting question in general, what a shvua is meant to accomplish. But the mechanism of shvua, for the most part, is only as effective as the integrity of the person we're dealing with. If a person is willing to brazenly lie, even with a shvua, so then the shvua is not going to do anything. If a person is immune to the religious implications of the shvua because of his personal lack of integrity, so then the shvua can't do so much. So here we could say that we have a certain goal we're trying to accomplish by imposing a shvua. And if the situation is such that for this person to be lying, he'd have to be a tremendous mechutzav as it is, it might be that a shvua is not going to add so much at that point. We're already dealing with someone who has to have a certain level of dishonesty or indecency to get to that point. The person who's kofar hakol is either telling the truth or is very indecent. Not a normal level of indecency, but a high level of indecency. It's a tremendous mechutzah. So maybe you could say that at that point, such a person, a shvua is not going to help so much. When you have a normal person who at least is embarrassed in front of Baal Chovo, has limits to what he's willing to say and to what he's willing to deny, so then a shvua could be effective in terms of pushing him to do the right thing. But you see that he's already made so much, so such a person, maybe a shvua is not going to have any effect. Maybe that's what Rashi means.
Hi. How do we qualify and or quantify what type of circumstance is going to be, if he's meis here, this is a regular haza, so, and if he's meis here, this is like a super haza.
So that's an interesting question. As we saw a little bit, we talked about migo to haza, that there is some subjectivity in terms of what's considered haza. Right? We saw in the Gemara and Baba Kama, there's a whole question whether the haza itself is the fact that you're with Nebal Chovo, or is it the fact that you're lying in front of somebody who knows you're lying? And it's even subjective as to what's considered to be ha'aza.
Okay, I mean, it seems like we're doing it kind of making assumptions, like we're just searching for an answer without ever having like a real precedent.
Well, the question is just why the Gemara wants to know, why is it that we don't put a shvua on somebody who's kofar b'kol? So the way Rashi understands it, that it comes from ha'aza, maybe it means like we just said, that a person who would be meis to such an extent is either telling the truth or shvua is not going to make a difference. So that just limits it again, that it's not that he has ne'amanus, we're not going to give him money because of this chutzpah. It's just that maybe it's enough to address the shvua component of it. And I'll just point out something else interesting and see if this helps at all. So we said that today we're not going to focus so much on the context in our Gemara, but we'll just mention this point for a moment. Right, so our Gemara really invokes Modim Mikzas in the context of a very complicated back and forth about the statements of Reb Chiya. Right, Reb Chiya Kamaisa and Reb Chiya Basraisa. So Reb Chiya wants to make the point that Eidim should be able to make a Shvuah, just like a Modim Mikzas, because it's a Kal V'chomer from Hodas Piv. That Eidim should be at least as powerful as one's own self-admission. So if a Modeh v'Mikzas, you come and you say you owe half, now you have to take a Shvuah. So Eidim are at least as powerful, Kal v'Chomer, so they should also have the same impact. If they say you owe $50 out of 100 you're being accused of, you should have to take a Shvuah on the other half, right? So here's a very interesting thing if you think about it. It's very easy to not focus on this point. Is that simply a mechanical, mathematical kind of Kal V'Chomer? Or does that get to the roots of anything? We are dealing here with emotional svaras. Ha'aza, no ha'aza, why he might do something, why he might not do something. So when you introduce Eidim, does all that still apply? Or do we say, no, it doesn't matter, it doesn't have to apply, it's just there's a, something called a kal vachomer, so mathematically, if it works here, it has to work there. If we're bringing Eidim into the equation, so are we still talking about Ha'aza and Nishtamute and any of that stuff? Or does the Eidim just transcend all of that and apply mathematically? Kal vachomer. What do you think? What's the real effect of Eidim in this scenario? Does Eidim have any relevance once we're talking about Ha'aza, Nishtamute?
That's it. Well, seemingly the basis for Eidim is more fundamental than the basis of Shua.
Okay.
We're going to take the perspective that Shua is a Gezeirah type thing to verify someone's credibility and integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Eidim seems to be more fundamental than that.
Seems like it's more powerful than a Shua.
Yeah, and it also seems like it's more, like...
Except that we're not necessarily comparing it.
Also.
Right, we're not necessarily comparing it to Shua, we're comparing it to his confession. Right, Rukhiya's premise is that if his confession makes him have to go Shua on the other half, in confession, not in the technical sense of acknowledgement, then he has to take a Shua on the other half, so Eidim should have the same impact. Except that the Hodah, we're only factoring it in because of how it addresses the chutzpah components and the yishtamute components and all that. So Eidim works within that structure? What do you think? Does Eidim have the same kind of ramifications, same kind of implications? The guy didn't admit anything.
Eidim's been strong.
So what you're saying is basically a mathematical point, kal vachomer. That's what it sounds like for Gemara initially. But if you think about it, we just said that it's unlikely that a guy who borrowed money is going to deny the whole thing. So this guy says, I owe nothing. Now Eidim comes and says, they say, says because they do Eidim, they either say or says, that you actually owe 50. What does that do to our initial assumption about the accused borrower? What does it do?
Doesn't necessarily change it. If we assume it's going to be loud enough to swear falsely anyway, so just because it's Eidim.
Well, we didn't necessarily think that till now.
Anyway.
And we still don't think it because we're still going to give him a shua. Right? But in terms of the whole Ha'aza equation, did they even
affect it?
Ah! Right? What did Jonathan just say? Clearly this guy does have Ha'aza. Because he denied that he owes anything. And now Eidim have showed up and said he does owe something. So the statement that you would not claim to owe nothing when you owe something is not true about this guy.
Those are in regards to Kofra Kol.
Right, but here the point is that
the
Eidim have the same impact as Motiv Mitzvahs. It's not only because of mathematics. It's not just because, okay, your Hodah is worth something and that makes you take a Shavua, so the Eidim also are worth even more, so they make you take a Shavua. But it fits into the whole emotional Sfaras. Because our whole assumption was we should let him off the hook because he wouldn't be such a Mechutzah to say he owes nothing if he owes something. But now we see that's not true. We see that he does owe something. And yet he said he owes nothing. So apparently this guy is such a Mechutzah. So then we should make him take a Shavua. So that would be a little different than we said a few moments ago. We're saying that the Mechutzah does have a role of taking a Shavua. But it's also a way of addressing this whole underlying Ha'aza mechanics, which, according to Rashi, is the actual reason why he's off the hook. Okay. Yes, sir.
Can you say there's a fundamental difference between once your positive gets patted out?
And now you should be moving that
way. Yeah, you're so embarrassed already.
Maybe. Okay, so you said to make it work with what you said a minute ago.
Yeah.
Before that, we said the shul wouldn't add anything. Now we'll say to an exposed mayiz, maybe it will add.
Yeah.
Okay, could be. But either way, these are two possible ramifications of Rashi's focus on Ha'aza as the actual reason for the exemption from the Shavuot. Now Tosfos makes the point, as someone pointed out already, that they don't think that it's based on Ha'aza actually, but it's really based on Gezeiras HaKasuv, which is a little bit of a hard Gezeiras HaKasuv to understand, which is why I would encourage you to look at the Gemara in Bava Kamma, which is where the drasha appears. It's a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. It's not very easy to understand from the flow of the psukim, but you should definitely take a look at it. It's a parak chav beis in pasuk ches. And it basically involves a shomer being challenged about stuff that's missing that he claims was stolen with somebody else, Tony Tanisyanov. And the pasuk says, Al kol devar pesha, al shor, al chamor, al sa, al salma, al kol aveda, asher yomar, ki hu zeh. Ad ha'eluhim yavo devar shmeim, asher yashun eluhim yashalim shneim l'riehu. So ki hu zeh, so the Gemara has a discussion about the context, that's where the whole era of Parshas, if you look at the Gemara over there in Bava Kama, comes in. Is this Gemara talking about a loan? Is it talking about pikadon? It's a little bit complicated, but the Gemara has an emphasis, ki hu zeh, that if a person says, this is what I'm chayiv and not something else, so then it's exeris hakasiv that he's chayiv in a shvur. So Tosfos' understanding over here is that it's exeris hakasiv, which is limited. It's only in a case where a person says, ki hu zeh. But if a person is a kofer hakol, there never was such a din. So the whole chiddush of the shvua was not extended to a kofer hakol. Not because he's granted extra credibility because of his chutzpah, but even in a situation where it doesn't involve chutzpah. So Tosfos gives the example, it doesn't involve chutzpah. Let's say if you're talking about the children, which also gets into some interesting psychological questions. You know, is that necessarily not chutzpah? Maybe you could make a case where that involves a lot of chutzpah. Up here, this, and I could paint the picture in a very emotional way if you want to hear. This old man was kind to help you in your time of need and lent you money, and then he died leaving orphans who were penniless, and you have their money because their father was nice enough to help you out at a time when you needed something. I mean, I could see why being kofar hakol to them has to tap into a certain degree of indecency. You may not say it's the same thing because you're not confronting the person who actually did it, but it also kind of opens up this question of where are we finding the chutzpah? The fact that you're denying a chesed that was done to you, the fact that the person knows you're denying the chesed, or the fact that the person knows that you're lying. So there's a lot to examine in terms of what exactly is the shoresh of this chutzpah. But in any event, that's what Tosfos assumes, that we could make up a scenario where there's no chutzpah involved, and still we would say kofar hakol is pater. It's not because of that, it's because the gzeres hakasev only addresses the chi of modeh v'miktas, and there is no makar to tell us that there is a chi of shvua for a kofar hakol. So this now, the next step, is going to affect the question of, so what is the chi of modeh v'miktas? And according to Tosfos, it comes out that the chiyuv of modiv mikzas is the pasuk. So the pasuk is the source for modiv mikzas, and it's limited, therefore it's not the source, or it's the lack of source, for kofar hakol. There is no chiyuv kofar hakol. Is she have another question? While Rashi, who focuses on ha'aza, so why is it that modiv mikzas is pater? Because it's going to be somewhat of a controlling factor against the ha'aza, like the Gemara kind of sounds like, that it takes a certain amount of ha'aza to deny everything, and denying a little bit is consistent with a mentality of ishtamute kamishtamut, that I'll stall a little bit, I won't be such a mechutzif to deny the whole thing, but it will allow things to drag on while I can get the money. So apparently ishtamute comes to offset ha'aza, and according to Rashi, that will be the chiyuv of modiv mikzas. The chiyuv of modiv mikzas comes from the fact that we don't have the svara of ha'aza to get you off the hook. So apparently the default is there should be a shvur. But just kofar hakol gets you out of it. While according to Tosfos, no, the whole shvur comes from a pasuk which is relevant only to modiv mikzas. Now this prompts the next question. So what is the nature of this chi of shvua, which is something that we'll have to get into a little bit more. If you see Tosfos Maseches Ksubos and Daf Yud Ches, that was on our list. And so Tosfos over there, how do they understand the chi of shvua and modiv mikzas? Somewhat like a ghost. somewhat like a Gilgul Shvuah, right? Again, different usage. But that the idea being that we know we have a concept of Gilgul Shvuah, that sometimes, even if there's no Chiyuv Shvuah otherwise, if a person already has to take a Shvuah so we can throw on everything else, secondary offense. It used to be the rule for seatbelts. It used to be the rule for phones. I think they changed it now for cell phones. It used to be they can only give you a ticket for a cell phone if they arrest you for something else. So it's a Gilgul ticket. So they have to, if they pull you over for speeding and you happen not to be wearing a seatbelt or speaking on a cell phone, they can give you tickets for that also, but they can't pull you over for the seatbelt. So too, sometimes you don't necessarily have the opening for a shvua, but once they're already up there, once they're already taking a shvua, so you can throw on another one. Hi.
Which shvua results in this one?
So apparently no. So apparently it's not the shvuah that necessarily does it, but it's the hodah takes that place of that. That once you've already acknowledged part of the loan, so that puts you in a category where you're already on the table, and just like a shvuah gives you the second shvuah through Gilgal, so too this hodah also gives you a new shvuah. While the Ritva, which I don't think I put on the list, but you can take a look tomorrow, the Ritva in Ksubis over there in Daf Yud Ches. So the Ritva says that what's the issue? It's a whole different perspective. That once you were Moda, so now there is Raglayim Ladavar. What does that mean? How do you understand that statement? Some kind of what? Yeah, we'll basically say it a little bit more. So who's involved? What is it? What are you basically saying? Seems like you're saying that essentially you come to me and say, I owe you money. So I say, nothing doing. I don't know you. I never had anything to do with you. I never borrowed anything from you. So to impose a shvuah upon me, which is a big deal, that's why we have them. And so to make me take a shvuah when I have nothing to do with you, so that's not fair. Why should I have to take a shvuah if I don't have any kind of connection here? But if I'm saying, yeah, I did borrow money from you, but I paid back half of it, so now you're not coming out of nowhere, which I guess that is what you're getting at. People are involved with each other. That now it's not that there's nothing to talk about. There is somewhat of a relationship. Right? This gets as a little bit of a loose comparison to our whole Kol Dal Midvar Yachloku kind of models. That there is a difference between two people fighting when they could have come out of nowhere and just decided to start a fight, and Bezdin's responsibility towards them, and two people who we know have a seat at the table. We know that there is an issue between them. We're obligated to respond to them a little bit differently. Or so too, to continue with our mashal about seatbelts and cell phones and police. So for the police to search your house, so they have to have grounds, right? They have to be given some type of suspicion, which is equivalent of the halachic term reglayim ladavar. They have to have something going on that gives them reason to do something. And it's not enough that they just want to search your house. They have to, so let's say in contemporary American law, you'd have to go to you may have to go to a court to get a warrant to search someone's house, or if a cop pulls over a driver and wants to search his car, so he can't just do it randomly. He has to have some reasonable suspicion. He has to have some reglayim ladavar. He has to have some grounds. So maybe we're saying, so what the Ritva sounds like, that if I come up to you and start saying, hey, you owe me money, so if there's no indication there's any transaction that ever happened there, so why should you have to take the shvuah? But if I come and I say you owe me money and you acknowledge, taka, yes, I do, just not as much as you say, so now the court has a bigger role. Well, now we have to figure it out. There is an admission that there is something going on here. We're just arguing about the facts. So it's not that this person is coming out of nowhere. That may indeed impose a burden of a shvua upon you. So that prompts the question, really, what is the nature of this shvua? Is this shvua because the individual, let's say, has a credibility issue? And now that has to be addressed? Or is the shvuah because nothing really to do with this person's credibility? It has to do with the facts of the case. that now we have a case, so something has to be done. Until he was moda, there wasn't really a case. There's just one guy screaming, you owe me money. But once he's moda, he did something to give some realism, to give some reality to the transaction, to the situation. So now we have a case, we have to treat it with more involvement from Beis Din, and this person has to actually respond in a more genuine way. So just to take these questions a little bit further. So, for example, just mention, let's say, two examples. What if you have a circumstance where somebody essentially is modeh b'mitzvos, but he doesn't really have this whole ishtamute ha'aza logic going on? For example, in Simenai and Vav, in Chosh and Mishpat, the Shach and the Nesivis argue about the following point. Let's say Jonathan and David both come to me and they say that I borrowed money from them to pay for the pizza party last week and I haven't paid it back. And Jonathan comes and says, I owe him $200. And David comes and says, I owe him $100. And I say, no, you guys got it all messed up. You got it all confused. Jonathan, I only owe you $100. Okay, right now I sound like I'm owed to mix us, right? However, why is it that I only owe you $100? Because I didn't borrow the $200 from you. I borrowed it from David. So you guys are just confused. You forgot that I owe David $200. And I owe you $100. So do I have to take a shvur to Jonathan for that? What do you think?
So if we say that we took away, or we gave, if we wanted to argue that giving credibility to the other guy's claim, the Ravai and the Dover issue, so it's not that he's completely denying that the other guy's a claim, he's saying he confused it, so not necessarily.
Well, yeah, that's also kind of shooting past just the one more basic question. Right? On the one hand, literally, I sound like I'm about to mix this to you. Right, because you say you want 200 from me, I say it's only 100. But the Gemara invokes the whole Ishtamute Svar, which clearly is not my motivation, because I'm saying I owe you exactly as much as you two think I owe you. I have $300 to pay out, but it's not the way you think. So that would seem to undermine any Ishtamute kind of issue. So in such a case, should we still apply this whole logic of modeh b'mikzas hatur? So according to the Shach here, which sounds like he's coming off of Tosfos, that it's essentially a gzeres hakasuv, there is a straight across the board kind of din that modeh b'mikzas is chayiv, and therefore I have to take a shvua regardless of the fact that there's no ishtamute at work here. While the Nesivis disagrees, the Nesivis says, no, essentially I only have to take a shvua because we're worried about ishtamuti kamishtamit. But here I'm trying to pay the exact sum you're asking, just not the way you say it. So therefore, that's interesting, you could also say that itself is throwing a whole monkey wrench into things that maybe is a stolen tactic. But apparently, you could say that that's not the case, that if I'm coming forward with $300, and that's what's being asked of me, so then I'm not interested in being mishtamet. I'm just saying things the way that I understand them. So that machlokis, the Shach and the Nesivis, seems to work off of, or seems to perhaps correlate to how much Svara plays a role here. Is it like Tosfos that's exeris akasuv across the board? Or are we really drawing heavily from this haza ishtamute factor? This could also address other questions in general. So our whole Gemara is about bringing a Kal V'Chomer from Hodah and Ha'adas Eden. What about other ways of tweaking things? So what about if I end up Chayiv without a Hodah in Mitzvahs? Which is a major discussion we'll probably get into a little bit more tomorrow. Or what if I am Moda, but not in a way that's actually mechayiv? So if there's a hodah on my part that gives some verification to the other guy's taina, but it doesn't happen to result in my having to pay half of the loan or half of the allegation, does that bring about a chiyuv shvua to me? In Siman Ayin Hey, in Choshen Mishpat, so the Shulchan Aruch discusses that if somebody is dealing with claims in front of Beis Din, people are claiming money against him, and he denies that he owes anything, but Beis Din, they can understand from the way things are playing out that he really is chayiv in part of it. So then the Shulchan Aruch says it's a mode of a mixed situation, and he's chayiv in the shvu. So the Ramah clarifies a little bit in a way that's not so clear, but kind of clarifies that what do we mean? We mean that if Beis Din can figure out from his statements that he's making a mistake, but really he's essentially acknowledging a part of the debt, and therefore we have to make him pay it. So then, fine, we'll treat that like a modiv mitzvah. But if he's denying it, but it happens to be Beis Din doesn't believe him for whatever reason, or the normal hilchos ne'amanus are not on his side, so he ends up being chayiv in part, says the Ramah, that's not a modiv mitzvah. So the Sma comments over there that, yeah, it's not a modiv mitzvah because you don't have a svara of ha'aza there. He's not really being modiv anything. That in order for us to apply modiv mitzvah, we need something to come out of his hodah. The fact that Beis Din is going to impose half of the payment on him, or partial payment on him, but it doesn't come from anything to do with his being modiv anything. So then the logic of modiv mitzvah doesn't apply. And there again, the Shach argues on that, without getting into what the Ramah means, but the Shach argues on the Sma and says, no, we still have the logic of Kal v'chomer from Hodas Piv, that Beis Din is as effective as Edim, as effective as Hodas Piv. So modiv mitzvah, you're chayiv, so if Beis Din is mechayiv, you should be chayiv no matter what. We should mathematically say that you are essentially subject to a shvu. So all of this draws upon some of these basic questions. What exactly is the nature of this chiyuv shvua, of the p'tur shvua with the kofar hakol? Is it based on emotional svaras, or is it based on gzeiros hakasu? To what extent are we tied in to some of these elements applying in their full sense? And what if we tweak parts of the equation? What if we end up being mechayev somebody without any hodah? What if somebody doesn't have the ability to be kofar for whatever reason? I'll have to talk about that a little bit tomorrow, probably. What if somebody essentially is mowed in a way that doesn't get him any chiyuv? So he gives some mamashas to the other person's claim, puts the case on the table. Is that enough to be mechayev and meshua based on, let's say, what we said before from the Ritva? So all of these are questions that we'll have to explore a little bit more. So before we do that, we'll continue this tomorrow. I guess that's quickly chazer we spoke about. Before we do, any questions we said so far? Does it make sense, more or less? Any issues? Any complaints? All right, so let's try to quickly go over what we spoke about. So essentially, we discussed the following. First of all, why is it that the Gemara seems to think that a modeb a mitzvah should have been tater? So we saw Rashi says, because it sounds like he's kemesh of Aveda. And we discussed that if it's a technical halachic point, it's a little bit difficult, because a genuine meshev Aveda, the motzi mitzia, is pater from a shvua, possibly only the Rabbanan, maybe the Raisa, but either way, it seems to be because of his mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, so it's hard to really plug this in a genuine technical halachic sense. But we said that we're also possibly comfortable seeing it in a little bit of a looser sense, saying as a matter of policy, it seems to make sense that we should encourage people to come forward with what they know and not discourage them by saying they're going to be in bigger trouble if they don't deny everything. In any event, Tosus says differently, one that's more satisfying to the technical halachic sense, the idea of Migo, that you could have thought that this person should be off the hook because he could have denied everything and he would have been pater from Shavua, so Migo, he didn't have to admit anything. And we don't say that because of Ha'aza. And then we discussed how this fits in with various views in Rishonim, depending on what you want to say. Either those Rishonim who say that Miko to Ha'aza doesn't work at all, or those Rishonim who say that it works for money but doesn't work for a Shvua, or those Rishonim who say no Miko works for a Shvua. There's a whole range of opinions which all could be consistent with this Gemara, but all we see here is that Miko to Ha'aza doesn't seem to get us off the hook for a Shvua, at least here. And then we discussed why it is that there is a chiyuv for a mode of a mixah, so why it is that there is a p'tor for kofar akal. So first, in terms of p'tor for kofar akal, we saw that Rashi in Bava Kamma says that it's because of ha'aza, which is very interesting because it's a different application of ha'aza until we've had now, had until now. Normally ha'aza just means we don't give you a full nigo because of the concern of ha'aza. Here we're saying that we should believe you because it would take too much ha'aza to be lying. And then we discussed that maybe it's very limited. It just means that it's good enough to fulfill the role of a shvua, that a person who would be meis in such a case, maybe a shvua is not going to add so much. But for monetary credibility, we're not going to give you that kind of points for being meis just enough to address the shvua consideration. We also mentioned that it takes in a slightly different direction. By Reb Chiya's point that we should say a kal v'chomer, that Eidim should be effective to make you be nishba for a mode of a mitzvah, kal v'chomer from Hodas Piv, but we explain that it's not only a mathematical point, that it's just as powerful as confession, but that it has a real world effect here, that once the Eidim come and say that he actually is chay of something, so then it shows us this guy is meis, this guy is willing to deny when he actually does owe something, and therefore the whole logic that gets him off the hook of a shvua no longer applies, so that itself should have the effect of being mechayev of the shvua, even in a non-mathematical sense. Then we saw that Tosfos over here in our daf understands it more as the Gzeres HaKasuv, the pasuk of Asher Yomar Ki Huzeh, a difficult rush. Again, I encourage you certainly tomorrow, assuming you haven't done it yet because it wasn't on the list, to look at that Gemara in Bava Kamma, Kuvav, Mebeis, Kuzayin, and Aleph. And there, Tosa says it's Akzer Sakasiv, and that also translates into how you're going to look at the Chiyuv of the Mode of Mixas. Again, Tosa is Akzer Sakasiv, and for Rashi, it's going to be because the Svara of Ishtamute offsets the Svara of Meiz. And then we discussed a little bit how do we view this Chiyuv Shvua. Tosfos in Sukkah says it's like a Gilgul Shvua, meaning that it's a Shvua that is thrown on to an existing situation, so your Hodah is like another Shvua. And according to the Ritva, it's because of Raglayim Ladavar, that normally a guy makes a fight against you, maybe nothing ever happened, you have no connection to this guy. But once you admit half of it, so now there is some substance to this claim, so there's enough that we have to probe things a little bit further. And then we talked about some cases which may test the role of Svara versus the logic or the various elements that are at play here. First of all, what if you have a scenario, as the Shach and the Nesivus argued about, where a person technically is motive and mixas, but it doesn't seem that he's trying to be mishtamet because he's admitting to owing as much money, just in a different way. The Shach says it's going to be a motive mixas situation anyway, and the Nesivus disagrees. And what if you have a modev, you have a chiyuv b'miktsas, but it doesn't really come from your hodah? That the Shulchan Aruch says that if the bezdin is machayev the guy half, it has a din of modev b'miktsas, and the Ramah has a chiluk, which the Sma explains that it has to at least come because the bezdin interprets his claim, his hodah, in a way that is machayev him. But if bezdin just doesn't believe him to some extent and ends up being machayev him for that reason, so that's not called a modev b'miktsas. And the Shach disagrees. He says the essential logic of the Gzeres HaKasuv and the Kal v'chomer still apply here, and Chiyuv of Bezdin is no less than his own Hodah. Okay, so I guess we will stop here. We'll continue, God willing, tomorrow. Shu Davin here. We,